We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
I say hey. Oh, what's going on? Good morning. Thanks for listening. Big week for me. I got a big week this week, man. I've got, I'm going to Chicago for like 30 hours at some point this week for PLMA, Private Label Manufacturers Association. It's a trade show, pretty much the biggest trade show for like food manufacturing specifically. CPG, Consumer Packaged Goods, has fancy food and a couple other things, but for the manufacturing side, it's all about this show here in Chicago this week. So I've got that. I've got Cornell. I'm going to spend a whole day in Ithaca this week. Plus, Ryan's birthday is Wednesday, and Friday night we're going to Hamilton. Oh, my goodness gracious. So much going on. So much. By the way, speaking of Hamilton, there's still tickets available, and if you haven't been yet since the renovations, they redid the entire Floriano room and the entire entrance into RBTL. The front steps are redone, but also that back hallway entrance is redone, and you walk by what you're going to see and think is a VIP room, but it is not. It is a room that is fully open to the public and opens earlier before a show than the past. In the past, it was like maybe an hour before a show at best. Now, I think it's at least an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours before the show. You can get in, get a seat, get a drink. It's just great. Everything they're doing there is great. For me, life is good. Leo's birthday went great. Georgie's birthday's in a couple of weeks. As I mentioned, Ryan this week. I'd say but there is, you know, something from my personal life causing me stress right now. If I could vent a little, it's so I'm on Wegovy, and I have lost, at the time of this recording, exactly 50 pounds. And I do have another 50 to go, no doubt, another 50 to go. So it's a long journey. But, you know, I've talked about this a little. And so some of this I'm going to repeat, but some will be new information. It took me a long time to get approved through my insurance. I was doing Ozempic about a year ago at this time and was paying for it over the counter. That was not sustainable financially. Getting it covered by my insurance has been a game changer. That took months and months of jumping through hoops and calling the insurance and calling the doctor. And the insurance blames the doctor. The doctor blames the insurance. We all know how this game goes. I finally got approved after probably about 6 months of begging. And right after that, I get this letter from my insurance carrier that was nothing short of like, look, bro, you win this round. Take your stupid Wegovy, but we're coming back for your throat, bro, in about 6 weeks or 6 months, excuse me, about 6 or 7 months. We're coming back and you're going to have to pre-authorize, because pre-authorization, of course, is what takes forever. And now they've released this statement saying as of January 1st, they're no longer recovering these, they're no longer covering these GLP-1s, these weight loss medications, but they're saying that they're saying, but you could be grandfathered in if you've already been authorized, which sounds great. But then you dig into the details of what that means. And basically what they say is, you know, at some point your pre-authorization runs out, at which point you have to meet the standards again. And so, okay, that makes a little bit of sense. So I found out in February, my pre-authorization runs out. I'll have to re-pre-authorize. But so then what are the standards and are they changing? And this is where it gets murky and they kind of won't tell you. But anyway, it's just I'm very afraid because it's going very well for me. And as I say that, I am dealing with some side effects. But one thing that really pissed me off is in the article that they put out, they said that their research shows 58% of people it doesn't work for. Bullshit. Bullshit 58% of people doesn't work for. If it's not working for you, it's user error or you stopped taking it. There is no way you can get on these weight loss medications and just continue eating in the way that I used to eat. If your issue was eating and you got on this medication, it is physically impossible. If I ate the way I used to eat, I would spend every second of every day in the bathroom throwing up, vomiting, and well, let's just say, you know, it would be coming out all eggs. exits. There is no way 58%, it has a 58% fail rate. I want to see that study. I feel like there's some skewing of the data there for sure. Anyway, they're using that to kind of toss their hands up in the air and go, well, see, it's not even really working for most people. So we're not sure we're going to cover it anymore. And to me, I smell bullshit on that. I just smell bullshit on it. I think it's, I think they're losing their asses on it. Probably. It's probably expensive. More and more people are meeting the parameters, and they're trying to backtrack on it. That's what I think, at least. You know, that's what I think. But I'll keep you up to date as I go. I know I'm not the only person who's constantly back and forth with the health insurance company. It's just can be a little exhausting. It's a lot of phone tag. It's way too confusing. And behind all of this I just told you about, I didn't even talk about the fact yet that they also issued price increases, which of course you've read about and heard about in the news and are probably experiencing yourself. But so on top of all this, they're also going, oh, and we're raising your price. I mean, it's just like, I don't know if the American public can, is the relationship between health insurance and the American public a long-term sustainable relationship anymore? Or is this thing like day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year at this point? I don't know. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get all dark and serious in this intro. This is a great, great episode. I am so excited. I mean, this is a heavyweight. This is an industry heavyweight. This guy owns most of the skyline you call Rochester, New York. And he's just Andy from down the street who used to swing a hammer with his dad and his uncles. I think you're going to love this story and love getting to know Andy Galina. I'm so proud. So excited he came on this podcast. Please enjoy. Okay. All right. And we're officially rolling. Wow. And I have to ask you,
okay.
I did realize when I was pulling up that I'm wearing a t-shirt and I smell like corn, like salsa today.
Kind of good with that though.
I mean, Galina, like you had to grow up with food around, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Was it Sauce Sunday? What happened?
Yeah. Well, my mother was a good cook and my mother was actually born in Italy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she moved here when she was 4 years old.
Tu capisci un po' di italiano?
No. I wish I did.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very interesting when you talk about that, is that you obviously did grow up in a household. My parents were much more concerned about assimilating. They were hard workers. They didn't want that stigma. It's very interesting. Well, different people embraced it in different ways.
Can I tell you, actually, so believe it or not, I didn't. I grew up the same way that you did. Okay. I went and I was an exchange student to Italy, which is where I picked it up.
Perfect.
But my grandfather was the same way you just described your mother. He was so proud to be American.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Like, we're here, we want to be American, and we're American.
Yeah.
And this is what our life is here now. Yeah. So it was very forward thinking, and it was kind of interesting. Now, years later, I regretted that.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to my mother. Why don't we talk more?
Yeah,
Italian. Why didn't we? My grandfather was, everything was Italian. He spoke very, very broken English.
Yeah,
but it was just cool, And you miss some of that heritage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm all the time.
I'm sorry that I don't have more of that, especially the language.
Well, something maybe that we're going to have in common here is, but for me, my whole business is about like paying homage to my heritage.
Yeah,
like that's kind of like the crux of our story,
Exactly.
And for you too, I obviously have known of you for a really long time, read a lot about you, and similarly for you. I mean, you grow up in this house where dad does he own the construction company? Is a construction worker? Like,
my father was a he was in the war. He was fought in the war, came home and worked for Manson News for a while, then got a gig as a carpenter and a laborer in this. In those days, things were a little crazy. There were a lot of guys coming back from the war when things stopped. And he settled in with a carpentry crew and started building houses.
Yeah.
He eventually had his own crew with my uncle. And then the next step was took the next step in building their own houses.
Where were they at? Like, what's your first memory of that? Like, where were they at in that journey when you
My father and my uncle would work from dawn to dusk.
Mm-hmm.
They would be, you know, they'd frame a house in a day and a half. I mean, they would just go, because that's how you get ahead.
Yeah.
And unbelievable work ethic, and very cognizant of how they did, and their reputation and everything was very important to them. And that what goes back to being American instead of the stigma,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the old days. So that pushed them hard. And when he had opportunities where there was such growth in the home building market, they, you know, in the 50s, 60s, you couldn't build them fast enough. And he was in that mix that kind of spun off and had a few bucks, and then he bought a lot, then built a house. Then he bought another lot, and then built a house. Then he bought a piece of property and built three houses.
Mm-hmm.
Then he, you know, and that's how it goes, Paul. You kind of take it step by step,
mm-hmm.
which is not unlike grew our business either. You know,
we just
mostly commercial, but it's a similar sort of thing. You keep striving for more and more as you learn the trade. So he became a home builder and was a pretty successful guy just building houses. He was happy and building houses, mostly West Side.
Do you recall entrepreneurship is such a roller coaster, right? It's just like, it's up, it's down, it's things go well today, they go poorly tomorrow. Do you recall him bringing any of that home at all? Or was he able to just kind of paint a rosy picture when he came home? Or did he ever come home with like, oh, today was a tough one, or oh, today was a great one?
I don't recall a whole lot of that.
Okay.
Be honest with you. But he just worked hard. There were days where I remember my mother expressing, say, Ange, you got a meeting tonight. You're working late. The kids haven't seen you in 3 days. Stop it.
Yeah.
You know, come home. And things like that resonate because that told me as I was working maybe a little too hard, back off a little bit. You know, family's most important. We always talk about family, right? That's what it's about.
See?
Your family's most important. That's a value. You know, come and see the kids. Do this. Stay with them. You know, and it was just kind of that similar experience that I'm sure that growing up as well.
Totally. But can I ask you about the – well, first, can I give you a fun fact about Italians and working all day? You know, like – do you know how, like, we have a lot of meat – you know, you ever have Italian food in America, and they're like, well, it's not quite the same as in Italy. Like, it's a lot heavier. We're like meatballs and sausage.
Right.
In Italy, a little more seafood, a little more, like, oil-based things. I just learned about a month ago or so that came from – because when we came to America, we had to work so hard that they just had to send them to work with more sustenance. So the wives and the mothers were like, just anything they could
do. Mind you,
put as much as they could in the lunch bail because they were going to be at work for 14 hours. So it's like, they give them big meals.
Makes
but
sense.
On a more serious note about work-life balance, this has become a buzz in the last bunch of years, right? There is some folks, they don't want to work weekends, they don't want to work at night. It's tough because I get it as well, because I have had times, I just had this last week, 2-3 days in a row where I don't see my kids. And I go, ugh, I don't want to be that. Also, I don't think there's any way I get as far as I have without some of that.
It's a balance, Paul.
I
have friends. It's not just me in a vacuum. You're with people. Some people work real hard and do that.
Mm-hmm.
You have a few meetings at night. You want to do this, get involved with this, maybe a night for yourself with the guys, maybe. But all of a sudden, it slips away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing that I've really tried to balance, and you see others, and you learn from others, not only from your own family. I don't want to do that. I want to do this.
Yeah.
And many of my friends, I gravitate to the guys that like family, that have a priority, that aren't running around over the years with, you know, 3 card games a week and this and that, because I know those guys too. You know, well, that tells me they're not quite happy. I couldn't wait to get home.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, totally.
So the work balance is really important, and you have to can't tamp down that entrepreneurial spirit too much. We'll work Saturdays. We'll go to the jobs. We'll see who's on. Because we weren't. After a while, I wasn't really swinging a hammer myself anymore. But I'll go out there. I'll have guys working 6 days a week. We'd see them, and you. That's respectful. If they're working, you got to show up.
Mm-hmm.
But that work balance relationship, we talk about it now. like everybody. But it's really important. It's really important. But there is a balance. There's a point where you got to put the time in, unfortunately.
Yeah. You grew up, but what high school did you go to?
I went to West Aranaquite.
West Aranaquite. And if I came to you on the graduation day, senior year, and I say, Andy, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? What do you think your answer was that day?
I'm going to build houses, buildings. Yeah.
Work with dad.
Yeah.
You started, I assume, before you graduated high school.
Oh, yeah. I was swinging. There's a funny story. When I was 4 years old, we were building a house for my uncle, actually, one of my other uncles. And I don't know what happened, but I had to go to work. Oh, God. Little Andy's with me. So my other uncle, who was a real character.
Yeah.
He said, I'll take care of him. Uncle Pooch. So Uncle Pooch takes me over the house in the corner and he says, don't worry, Angie. Andrew's my father. So I'll take care of Andy. So I go over and he's giving me a little hammer and he gives me a box of nails. He says, okay, you just drive some nails here, you know? And they forgot about me. 3 hours later, I had the nail heads in the corner were like touching each other. I just
kept going.
Hours going. I swear the house probably tipped. There were so many nails in that corner.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was hilarious. And they always told that story. Remember the time when we...
At four years old.
5 years
already.
Old. They're always swinging.
Now, I have a 7-year-old, and he has not yet come to work with me. Is he a little lazy? Do you think I should get on him? Do you think maybe it's time?
Yeah, really. He's a slacker, obviously. Jeez.
He came out one time, and I had him put in jars and boxes for... It lasted about 15 minutes or so. Then he wanted his iPad.
I don't know if it was actually four, but I was young. Yeah. I was pretty young. They
story.
Just stuck me, parked me in the corner.
Yeah.
I just...
So was there not a single moment as when you're a teenager that you don't think, hey, maybe I want to go off and do something different? You're always going to go into the family
business.
I was
pretty focused, and I went to school, and I have an engineering degree, but always focused. And a lot of my peers in school were doing research and engineering and interviewing and this. And I said, "Nah, I'm gonna try my thing at home."
Yeah.
I never really interviewed. I never really wanted to take my engineering skills elsewhere.
Am I hearing that? Have you never in your life interviewed for a job? Wow. I mean, right? You haven't, right? That's interesting. You know, like, I mean, you're that focused from that early. That is really cool.
I just know, you know, my father, I came home, graduated, come home, and I said, Dad, I take a couple of days off. Listen, next week we're going to start to see. Okay. You know.
Yeah.
And from a kid that's got a degree and all this stuff, I was right in the trenches.
That's cool.
And I just learned everything. And to this day, I even tell my kids, I said, you know, it's hard to tell people how to do things if you haven't done it yourself. Now, I'm not talking about technical. I'm talking about, you know, just the basic components of building and, you know, and getting in the trenches and understanding how things go together.
Yeah.
You got to know that.
Sure.
Before I can just tell people how to do it.
It's just reps,
scheduling,
right?
Yeah.
What's that guy that's got the 10,000 hours book? Like,
yeah,
just,
right.
Just
so
need
a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah, you need
You're
to
right.
be out there. You need to do it wrong a couple times, too. I don't know if you've experienced that. But
a lot of mistakes.
In my experience, like if I do, you know, anything you see me do well, let me tell you about the first time I tried. Because it didn't go well the first
no
time
question.
I tried.
No question. It takes you a long time to get that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
okay,
true.
So you joined Dad and Angelo, right? Angelo Galena, legend. And he has this construction business. You guys are mostly building houses. But at some point, I read in the 70s or 80s, you guys kind of pivot to commercial. Do you remember time?
A friend, he had two buddies that they used to actually have coffee together, and they were social friends, and they said, let's do some stuff together. Let's what do you think? Let's get into real estate together. One was Ray Shaheen of RC Shaheen Paint Company. That's before your time.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a very, very prominent painting company. Another one is Andy Pluta. Do you know the Pluta family?
I do.
Ronnie and the plant, Ronnie's father, Andy, was one of my father's closest friends, and he had General Circuits, did very well, and he was one of the pioneers in the circuitry business. This is 50, 60 years ago. So they got together and threw some money in and bought a piece of land and built a building. And my father was the builder, and those guys were the kibitzers and, you know, busting chops and everything, maybe sign a lease or do this. But my father did. So I joined them. And that was my first venture into commercial building. So we were doing houses. And then I got exposed to that side, which to me I loved. That was a whole different thing. That was kind of earth-shattering for me because I wanted to do more. Houses were interesting. Probably part of me is in this entrepreneur. I have a creative urge. And if you're a little more creative, you won't get stuck building 1,200 square foot ranch houses after another and the track houses, because that's what my father was doing. He couldn't build them fast enough. He was doing fine and making ends meet and all that stuff. But for me, it just didn't excite me. So when I had an opportunity to do some more commercial work, then I got into building bigger buildings.
I've done a few hundred of these interviews, and something I think that comes out over and over and over with successful entrepreneurs is what you just described. It's a natural curiosity, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like that's what you're describing.
Exactly.
So what was it? So that's obviously a motivation. That's a creative motivation. But business-wise, what is the motivation of moving more into commercial?
Well, it was a couple different things. You know, commercial is business to business. Residential is personal. It's a different approach. Even in apartments, you've got after hours calls, you've got other stuff. Commercial is business to business. It's usually during there's emergencies, yes, after hours, but very infrequent. And I like that space better. I wanted to deal with business people. I didn't want to deal with Paulie, and all of a sudden his wife comes in. Well, you know, Paulie, I don't think so, because I think that should be bigger, and I want the bathroom green instead of blue. Well, why?
That'll drive you crazy.
I joke about it. That's what happens.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
The residential market is very different.
Yeah.
And not that I didn't have patience for it, Elizabeth. I just saw potential of recurring income. Once you put these deals to bed, you build a building, you lease it, and you have recurring income based upon the leases.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Sounds simple, right?
Sure, yeah.
Not all that simple, but conceptually, that's what I wanted, and I started doing that.
What did your father think of this when you said, I'm going to go in this
Well, he was okay with it, but he was also, as I started to push him, he always thought I was nuts. Why are you doing that? Jeez, yeah, you know, And then when I would figure out how to do it, it would be his idea, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, we're doing this, Bill. Yeah, yeah, Dad.
That's right.
It was great.
I know that. I know it. I've been there before.
We've built and own a couple of indoor sports facilities, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my father, he was. Why would what are you crazy? What do? You got to finance this stuff. They're nuts. Once he got it up and running, he was out there three nights a week, around, looking. Oh, this is unbelievable. Don't you love what we did?
Yeah.
To the people. So it was great.
That's pretty cool.
That's great. We had a good relationship.
At some point, if I skip any major pivotal parts, please stop me and tell me. But at some point, you kind of focus on downtown. When did that?
Later.
That's way later. Okay, yeah.
We built, I started, the first foray into commercial buildings was with the my father's partnership. And then I took some of those concepts about building buildings, mostly industrial warehouse buildings for rent. And then took that to a piece of property out in Gates. We built one, then we built the next one. All of a sudden, you got a park. Well, I like that concept. You do the development, improve the land, and then you have approved lots that you can build these buildings to go along. And most of my concept, most of our growth took place under a product we call flex building. Flex buildings are office and office warehouse buildings that are generally good size that you can cut up into tenants from front to back. So you have a 20,000, 10, 20, 30, 40,000 square foot building, and you cut them into three, four, five tenants, based upon what you would need. You need a little office for your business in the front, in the back you're making sauce. So it's you need a little bit of this office and warehouse or production space. That's the flex market. And we did that successfully 3 or 4 times with different parks. And then I looked at an opportunity crazy. I wonder if I'm crazy now. At One East Avenue was the first adventure downtown.
How does that, I mean, you own pretty much all the most iconic downtown buildings, or at least most of them.
We do now.
That was the first one.
That was the first one.
You just say you lucked into, but I got to hear the story. Like, what's the first phone call?
Well, what happened, there was a lease on it. Bank of America leased the building, and the building started with Security Trust, and that has a whole history. Ended up with Bank of America, and they leased it for a while, and then they left. And right now we're still trying to redevelop, redo that as office space. But based upon that relative success when we had full tenancy in the building, I had an opportunity to buy the Metropolitan, which is JPMorgan Chase building, Lincoln Tower. Mm-hmm. So I made a leap of faith on that one. And we got into this and realized one thing very soon, very early, after our acquisition, is that it's a big building and our office market could not fill up that building. So we started thinking about conversions. Now, in the last 5 or 6 years, all kinds of buzz about conversions, office space conversion. If you look at New York City, all these guys, it's unbelievable what some developers done. I did that 10 years ago. It's the 11th year. And it came out of understanding the market that we're going to buy this, but we know we can't fill this up as office space. It was all office space. So for 11 floors there, we stripped it. We completely gutted them and then built apartments.
Can I ask you just a little Rochester history? Prior to your ownership, I think when that building is first built, either one, JP or One East Avenue, was Bank of America the original, like they built that building or like what?
Bank of America is a successor to Security Trust.
Okay.
Who was the original.
Okay, and they built that, and at the time they built that, they could fill every office, right?
Or it was a bank building.
It was, right. And then in J.P. Moore, the Lincoln building?
Lincoln Tower.
I don't know enough about
Lincoln First. It was one of our premier banking institutions in Russia before they were bought out by Chase and J.P. Morgan Chase.
So this, and by the way, I'm talking to Andy Galina. Like, I feel so naive and like an idiot asking these questions. Right. But like, because to you, this is like, oh my God, we're going to kindergarten. But to me, this is just interesting. I didn't know. But what a crisis for any downtown that those buildings can be filled with just one company's office workers.
Right.
That all those years later, it's like, oh, we can't even fill this with offices. And they've got all these buildings just, were they vacated or was there entire floors with nothing going on?
Well,
or what was going on?
In the case of Lincoln Tower, they had other tenants in there as well.
So it gets to the point where you're leasing a floor.
And they had the premier tenants of a who's who list of tenants. And Nixon started there. Nixon Peabody started there. A couple of Price Waterhouse, Deloitte, mm-hmm. I mean, all the big firms, at some point, Gannett mm-hmm. was in the building. There were so many premier tenants that were in that building, along with the operations of Lincoln mm-hmm. Trust. Then it changed a little bit, and banks didn't want to be in real estate. That's how I ended up with One East Avenue. That's how I ended up with Lincoln Tower. They don't, corporate America didn't want to own real estate. It was kind of a shift. And it was because they didn't require as much office space, so they were downsizing, trying to reevaluate. When I bought Lincoln Tower, they were in 7 floors. The bank was pared down to 7 floors, just 26 floors, pared down to 7 floors, the branch bank and an operations center in the lower level, their data center.
Wow.
Today, they have the branch, and they have one floor.
Wow.
So this trend continues, and that's how you have to readapt. You just can't sit back and wait for the phone to ring for another office tenant to replace the tenant. So you have to be aggressive and think about that. So that's one thing. At that time, we recognized that we had to approach this wonderful, iconic building in a different way. And that's what we came up with, and relative success.
What's it like in the room? You know, I'm a Hamilton fan. The room where it happens. What's it like in the room where it happens? I mean, who's in the room when you are deciding, hey, you know what we're going to do with this place? We're going to buy it. We're going to turn it into this. Is this...
It's a small group.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small group. I have a right-hand guy who's been with me for 30 years, Kurt Sertl, and he's been right with me, and I would be the one to say, oh, Kurt, we're going to do this. Could you make it happen? He'll go, yeah. I don't know how, but we'll figure it out.
You need that guy.
Can I find it? Nah, but we'll figure it out. And he does it.
Yeah.
So you need a strong bench. You need people around you.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, my kids were already in the business. It's only 10 years ago, and all three of them were already. Lauren was just coming into the business, but the two boys were already in the business and had an interest in doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And like young kids, they don't know what they don't know. Yeah, sounds like a great idea. You know, let's run.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. Sometimes, what do they say? Ignorance is bliss, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's like, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's just figure this out.
Can I take you back? Just because, again, a lot of business owners listen to this, much, much smaller businesses than Galena. But you know, when you go to make that, you called it a leap of faith to buy One East Avenue, right? That was the mm-hmm. first one. You're building the flex spaces. You go to buy One East Avenue. At that point, you've established a hell of a banking relationship, I assume, right? But that is, do you have to sell anyone on that? Like, do you have to go to your bank, to your person, and say, I'm going to go buy this building? Or is it just like, hey, Andy, man, we're going to back you, whatever.
No,
you turn everything into gold.
It's a little of both. Okay. In those days, it was much more relationship. And today, it's not quite as much. But, Paul, you got to have a plan. Mm-hmm. You got to have a proforma. You got to give me some information. They're not going to lend you that kind of money.
Sure, give it a shot.
Project here. Andy's good for it. Don't worry about it. Well, you know?
Yeah, so you got to go in showing that this makes sense. And this idea that we're going to convert it, that's the way that you kind of broke through and said, here is our plan, this is going to work, and that was how they all went. We agree. We think this plan works.
And at the same time, we had some interest in some other office space. Excuse me. Datto was shopping around, a young startup company, and they were going crazy. A guy by the name of Austin McCord, mm-hmm. graduate from RIT, gave them a lot of money, was in town, and he was scaling up like crazy, and they have 6 floors in the building right now. Now, unfortunately, Austin sold the business a number of years ago, and it's been sold a second time, and they're scaling back. So they're under lease, we're okay, but another victim of reduced office space. So we don't know what's going to happen with that space. More conversions, maybe, maybe not. We like the balance of a mixed use, not all
totally
residential
either. Yeah. Can you talk now that you've got a decade in retrospect of building these flex spaces, not flex spaces, but the office, the residential, it's all happening in one place. What have been the couple of things that you thought, yep, I knew it, that would work? And then also maybe just one or two things where you're going, ugh, I didn't see that coming.
Well, on the heels of the Metropolitan, the Xerox Tower was available. Larry Glazer was a good friend of mine. I still miss him. I wonder what the world would be like if he was with us today. But we were very friendly competitors. But we were competitors, and we look at some stuff, similarly. And Larry and his family own that, with another partner or two. And while Larry was still alive, they took a buyout from Xerox. They canceled it, and then the building went dark, almost dark, and then they were trying to lease it up. Larry has his accident, and then that partnership is kind of stuck. What do? We don't have Larry. Larry's son, Ken, is also a good friend, and we just talked about what if, what are you going to do with this thing? So they had 2 or 3 outside offers, and I found myself as last man standing, basically. And based on what we were looking at, or what our experience was over at Lincoln Tower, we started to look at Xerox building a little differently. Paulie, if you look, you're familiar with the building. It's, mm-hmm. it's the tallest building in town. At some point, walk around. It's a campus. It's a full block. It's got a theater at one end, the tower here, a connector, a recessed area that we now have the YMCA in as a tenant. We have a recreational area down there. It's a campus, and the idea started to develop as, why don't we do some student housing here? My son Evan did some research on this. There are some comparable projects, a little different, because most of the projects that he was able to find were funded by either large developers, big guys, or the schools. We had neither of those. But what we did pre-COVID, I gathered the presidents from the University of Rochester, RIT, Nazareth, Fisher. Eventually, we added Brockport, but the first four, the sale on the whole concept was student housing, downtown student housing.
No. Is that air conditioning or is that rain?
Yeah, it's air conditioning.
It's air conditioning. Oh, no. Yeah. It's great.
It's a little loud.
I'll call the landlord if you got an issue. Yeah. I don't think they'll be able to hear it through the microphone, okay. But just so they know what we're referencing, the air conditioning kicked on. Feels good.
A little background noise.
Yeah.
So we gathered those four presidents and started talking about student housing downtown. And I'll tell you, the way we talked about the integration and interacting of students with different backgrounds, different interests, the synergy was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all like, yeah, this is great. That's awesome. We had verbal commitments for all 420 beds by the time we had two or three meetings.
That's amazing.
COVID hits.
That's what we're going to get to, yeah.
So this is where I'm getting to.
Yeah.
COVID hits and all bets are off.
Yeah.
RIT, U of R end up closing their dorms and refunding their students millions of dollars. A lot of money. They're scratching their heads, said, what the hell are we doing? And I'm like, guys, do I do this or don't? And they said, well, yeah, you should do it, but we can't commit. So that was one of those meetings. We sit around the table with my team and guy, okay, now what?
It's called
well,
an
we
ocean.
Decided to, yeah.
Yeah.
We decided to proceed. Why? Because we thought COVID wasn't going to last forever and actually gave us a construction time period during COVID to do the project. So we did that. And originally, RIT was going to take the bulk of the beds, 300 beds, and U of R 100 and the other schools a few here and there, or independently. We weren't really about the balance. Well, it turned out that RIT bailed entirely. U of R had a need, so we've established a very good relationship with them, and most of the beds now are occupied by U of R students.
Welcome to the world of Punches and Popcorn, where we dive into the bone-breaking and kung-fu-kicking world of martial arts cinema. Join us on the path as we explore a new movie every episode, discussing the history, fighting styles, science, and more from a broad range of fight films. Everything from Bruce Lee to Jean-Claude Van Damme to John Wick. There's plenty of room in our temple of couch potato style. So listen in and subscribe to Punches and Popcorn on your favorite podcast app.
Hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am a host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunch Door Podcast Network, which is everywhere.
It's a great story, but it does bring us to a portion of just the general idea. I mean, every landlord in every downtown went through COVID. I hate 5.5 years later still bringing up COVID, but like, especially with who I'm sitting across from right now, there had to be some real sleepless nights. I mean, at the beginning, they're telling us 2 weeks. Remember 2 weeks?
Yeah, don't worry. We'll be...
Two weeks. 2 months.
Well, what happened also, for a financial standpoint, we had requests from virtually every one of my tenants. I can't worry. Can you defer my rent? Can you do? The U of R asked me to defer rent, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
Top to bottom, small companies, big companies. It was very difficult for us because
it's a crisis.
All of a sudden our cash flow is gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're digging deep and try to survive. Thank God it worked out. We did what we committed to do. We helped as many tenants, virtually all the tenants, on payment schedules. It came back. And we survived. But what was difficult is when it was like a double whammy, if you can imagine, we were not getting the cash flow and then also investing downtown. We had a big construction project going. So it was difficult. It's difficult. And it's taken us years and years to recover.
It's a full-blown crisis because you have bills to pay. So do they, and you're one of the bills. And I mean, what a hard decision that is to make in every situation. So it was just some sort of, you just kind of found middle ground with everybody. Is that basically what you're telling me?
We negotiate a lot, but try to help.
Yeah.
As much as we could.
This idea of that everybody works from home for, again, 2 weeks, 2 months, ends up being years. Some people still working from home 5.5 years later. I can't imagine that they can't. You can't love the words work from home, I would think. If I were you, I wouldn't love the words work from home. What percent has come back? Where are we sitting in October 2025? November.
We've got various statistics. It's actually only 50-60% with a trend in the last year of having more people come back. I don't have any current statistics, but at one point it was 50%. Now, when that happens, you as a business owner said, holy, I only got half my workforce coming to the office. Why do I need 10,000 square feet? Why don't I go to 5,000 square feet? Do the math. You know the money I can save? So this is the trend, and we're still fighting that with companies that have pared back. Some are requiring their employees to come back to work, but even not 5 days a week. So the occupancy is still down, and that hurts everything. That hurts not only our industry of owners and operators of commercial real estate, but for example, downtown, Paul, we just don't have as many people downtown. There's not enough people walking the streets, buying coffee, having lunch. It affects everything.
I have people that I'm around. You may as well. I don't know, but people who are suburbanites who are afraid of downtown Rochester. I had somebody reached out to me recently and said, best seafood restaurant in Rochester. And I said, oh, you got to go to Velvet Belly in the Public Market. She wrote me back and she said, oh, we can't go to the Public Market.
It's not safe.
It's not
where
safe.
Where do I park?
It drove me crazy. I wrote her back a three paragraph, soliloquy. I don't know if that's the right word or not. Just saying like that is the worst mentality you could have. Please come. It is so rare that any issue happens. I understand, but the news is kind of killing
me. The news is the news.
If it bleeds, it leads. It's been the same for years.
I could tell you some unfortunate situations about people, but the fact of the matter is we've got a great core downtown. We've got some good restaurants. We've got a reason to come back, and it's getting better and better. It's not easy, but we have to start really curating downtown in a serious way, and we're starting that way because it comes with funding. State, city funding, about really curating who we want on Main Street. And without getting ahead of myself, it's starting to happen. You got to fill up Main Street. You got to get people on the street.
Yeah.
Because you can get people on the street, it's safer.
Yeah, totally.
People are not mugging people if there's people around.
Yeah,
right. They're mugging them in the back alley, and those sort of things. Now, do we still have car break-ins? Yes. Do we still have some car thefts? Yes. But we don't have murders. We don't have, not too many.
It's not zero. Downtown. It's not zero, but the perception that you can't park on the street and walk to Dinosaur Barbecue, right? So I did a Fringe Fest show at the library and walked 1.5 blocks to Dinosaur Barbecue and told somebody that I was doing that, and that person said, be careful. from the library to Dinosaur Barbecue.
You can see it. It's like right there. Yeah.
Like what people, I mean, I think what they see on the news, they think is downtown all the time. And it drives me crazy. And I'm on your side and I fight this anytime it comes up. I have to imagine it has come up for you in the circles maybe that you're in. At some point in your company, somebody has said something about, oh, we don't come to downtown. How do you answer that when people say that?
Well, you discuss those few and far between. The violence, the serious violence, is usually individual against individual. I mean, targeted, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Yeah, we had a shooting on Parcel 5. It was actually up on East Street. It was a guy against a guy. They had an argument and they ran away. A guy had a gun. He shoots him. Well, they're not out shooting in the crowd. But I really think we have to change our approach on this stuff. And I'm trying to talk more about positivity. And mm-hmm. I think our city and our administration with the mayor, who is a friend, and he gets it. He understands. We have to be positive. Don't play into all the negativism and be defensive about things. Come down because this is happening. This is happening. We got new restaurant opening here. We got a restaurant here. Come down to Barbantam or Farmhouse or Bronca. You know, Patron Saint is great.
Not a lot of people know, named after Larry Glazer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Patron Saint of Rochester.
Right. These are the types of things. Come down, guys. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to walk around. I remember it was still kind of warm. My wife and I had dinner at Patron Saint, and we came out and walked around the block in the little Grove area. You know, you just smile. This is cool.
It's so cool.
This is big city stuff.
It feels vibrant. There's coming out of Patron Saint and going to where you get your valet. And the nice cars pull up, you know, like the Teslas, the pink Cadillacs and stuff. And I brought my parents to Patron Saint recently, and I told them, I go, it doesn't even feel like Rochester right here. Like this feels like New York City right here, man. Or it feels like Florida with all the fancy cars like lined up. You seen Florida? They always get all the nice cars right in front of the restaurant.
Yeah, right. They park in there.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like you said, vibrant, energetic.
Yeah.
There's something going on there.
There's a vibe going down, but you have to help promote that, Paul. We can't dwell in this negativism.
You're right.
One of the worst things that we did as an administration is defeat the Business Improvement District 2 years ago. City Council we have progressives, they didn't want, they actually ran, are running on issues of corporate takeover. Well, there's no corporate takeover. I'm the guy.
Yeah.
I'm defending the fighting the corporate takeover. I said, who's the corporate? It's me.
Yeah, Andy. I grew up here, man. I built houses.
What are you talking, man? And it was just shocking to me that they would take this narrative that we're losing control. No, 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 no. If there's more money from our corporate tenants, you take your streets back. There's more resources. And they miss that whole concept.
It's
really unfortunate.
I'm sorry to ask you to rehash it, but I don't quite remember that. It was the BID, right? The Business Improvement District.
Yeah.
What was the pitch, and then what was the reason why they said no?
The pitch is that there's business improvement districts in Buffalo, Syracuse, Auburn, Ithaca, Canandaigua, Geneva. There are 76 in New York City. Now, the naysayers pick up the two or three that haven't done well. Oh, a guy stole money, or this didn't happen. You know, really, people?
Mm-hmm.
In New York State, there's over 100. We don't have one. Our mayor has been quoted like, I'm embarrassed that we don't have a business improvement district because everybody else does, up and down the thruway, everywhere.
What does it actually mean? It means
it means a pooling. It's a public-private relationship where there's an entity formed that would be funded by the private side, meaning property owners, with the ability in some manner to have tenants contribute, building owners, tenants, large corporate tenants, not so much. No residential tenants, the small commercial tenants. We have very few small commercial tenants on Main Street anyways, but the assessment would be very, very low. That wasn't the detriment. They didn't understand that people like J.P. Morgan and the Datto, the big corporate, those are the people that would pay into this, raise hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and then we'd use that with a board, a public-private entity, that would do street improvements, this and that, and all this stuff. Now, fast forward, because we didn't do that, we took it upon ourselves through the in Downtown Enhancement District to do some things in building improvements. This year, for the first time, we had a whole program up and down Main Street planting flowers. The city has cooperated very, very well with us with recommended maintenance items. You're going to see we're going to have new Christmas decorations this year.
Awesome.
Where does this come from? It comes from our donations in the primarily from the state, or not from the state, the county, and the city contributing. And it's year one, but I could show you pictures of what it was last year. Half the lights are out. The snowflakes are broken. I'm like, really? Really? We're better off without them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a revamp this year. So this is how you get this public and private sides working together. The mayor's been very supportive. County executive's been very supportive, thank God. They get it. They get it. We need to make downtown as attractive and fun and vibrant as we can, because that will now to spur more development and more interest downtown. If we don't make downtown safe and an attractive place, we're not going to be successful as a community, because downtown is our core, our biggest concentration of people and businesses.
Are you able to turn this off? Are you able to be Andy and go home and watch the Bills game and hang out with your wife and have a glass of wine? Or is this just always going through your head?
I, that's an interesting question. It's always there.
Yeah.
I try not to talk about it too much.
Yeah, and your whole family's in the business. So when you guys get together on Thanksgiving, like, what percent is work talk and what percent is not?
It's not, and then something jumps up.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way. Yeah, I know. And probably because we put a line in the sand here. We're in deep.
Yeah.
And I say that from a standpoint from investment and responsibility.
Why
walk away?
Why have you, I mean this as a gigantic compliment, I hope you know, but why have you taken on this burden of beautifying Rochester? Like, why do that to yourself? I love that you're doing it. We need you. You are, you and Larry, Ken now, I suppose, but you just took it on and said, I'm going to make it my thing that Rochester's going to come back and it's going to be vibrant. You have a ton of money investment into it. You've probably taken some freaking lumps, especially with COVID. And what is it that just makes you go, this is my thing, I'm going to make?
It's a sense of pride. And
it's that, awesome.
The pride and my family, they're vested now. They're involved. They see it, and it's our legacy. It's our city. And if you look, we don't do this in a vacuum. You look at smart people, smart urban planners, designers. What makes cities vibrant? You've got to have a healthy mix of housing stock, from affordable to luxury and everything in between. You've got to have ownership opportunities. You've got to have a good mix of office, high-end office and mid-range. I mean, there are balances to make the soup, to the sauce, excuse me. to make it all work, you see? If you have too much in the luxury market, you're leaving folks behind. Too much in the affordable, that's not going to be a track. I mean, you need investment across the range. But we're on this new thing. We have to make Rochester cool again. I don't know if it's cool again or just make Rochester cool.
We are cool.
We're pretty cool.
Look at Fringe Fest. That brings a lot of people downtown.
Look at the Jazz Fest, Fringe.
Yeah.
I mean, we have so much. My sister's involved with Fashion Week. We have a lot of these cool events that we're doing.
Yeah.
We need to celebrate, Quilly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, we don't celebrate enough.
We don't.
And we don't talk about all the great things that are happening. As I said, I reference, we're kind of creative group here. We try to think about, we've got public art that we've installed downtown more than anybody else. I got 4 or 5 installations.
Yeah, and you that's what I talk about when I go, you don't like,
I don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that. And that probably is, that's, there's no return on investment. I mean, maybe there is in
there
terms
is,
of,
but not really.
Not,
when I in front of the Metropolitan, we made a decision to buy an Albert Paley sculpture.
Yeah.
Albert's a friend of mine, and we worked out a nice situation and whatever, but I didn't have to do that. But it's cool. And it elevates downtown. If you're a visitor, you walk down and go, whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. He thought, my
first
parents.
Thing I did that, Lauren got on social media. Why are we spending money on this stuff? We can't be, we shouldn't be.
Well, you know.
It wasn't public money, buddy.
Yeah.
Those three pieces on that piece of property, we paid for. We have an installation at Xerox in the corner. We paid for that.
Yeah,
people just think that.
Show up to that guy's house and when DoorDash shows up, go, why are we spending money on DoorDash, pal? What are we doing here?
So sometimes you get a little discouraged. And we get back to the bid.
Oh.
I was kind of the face of the bid, and right or wrong, and people were attacking me personally. It was unconscionable. And I still don't understand. I still don't understand why I was such a threat, why that bid was such a threat when it's successful in so many other communities.
Yeah.
It was disappointing.
I don't either. Sometimes
it may come back around in a different, we learned some lessons,
yeah.
But it may come back around.
You're saying the biggest thing right now, what is on top of mind for you, is Main Street. You're going, Main Street has to be walkable. It has to be a thing where you just pop in, shop after shop after restaurant after shop after, right? Is that the next job for downtown?
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, it, right now, how many years away do you think we are from that being realistic?
Well, probably 5 years.
Okay.
And we have to keep in mind that there's a big hotel on the river that is an eyesore, and I don't know what's happening. And I don't know what the current developer is doing. Nothing's happening, and it's been sitting there for a while. We have other New York State grants that are sitting dormant for some of the downtown properties that are not moving. Now, on a positive side, there's just been a sale for the Gateway building. A CGI just sold one of the buildings, or a couple of the buildings, for redevelopment for housing. That's great. We'll see activity. We'll see people on the street. People live there. They're going to be walking around. When they get there, they're going to want a shop somewhere. They're going to need a pharmacy. They're going to need, you know, some food or something. They're going to need high-end restaurants. They need a taco shop, pizza shop right on Main Street. This is how the infrastructure gets built and the ecosystem supports each other. It takes time.
As you think about succession planning, at some point, are you going to retire? Are you going to do this?
I'm already slowing down.
Are you okay?
You may not realize it, but on day-to-day, the kids have a pretty good handle on what to do. We have a pretty good team here. We're not all that big, but we have a pretty good group of people here that can run this. Don't worry about me. I travel. I take my time off. But we got good people.
Is it easy for you to go away for a week or two? Or are you always thinking?
Yeah, I'm always a little thinking. I can't help it because it's not only the company, but it's my kids. You know? Yeah. I don't want too much pressure on them.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And you have grandkids, right?
Yeah.
Do they have any ideas yet about what to?
Well, no, but we filed for WBE status. I have 4 granddaughters and 2 more granddaughters coming.
Oh, the future is female, buddy.
I'll have 6 granddaughters.
Yep.
In March, Lauren's pregnant. She's the last one in March. She'll have a second daughter.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
So I have 3 kids. All of them will have 2 little girls.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's crazy.
So the future's female around this joint, man.
Said. We're filing now.
Yeah.
I see what's happening.
Yeah. Pretty good.
It's cool.
Okay. So can I talk a little bit about being a leader? And I got to be conscious of your time here. Okay. So you've got a lot of people who are dependent on you. That's the thing is you've grown. It's a lot of people dependent. How have you found leadership to be over these years, going back to swinging a hammer all the way to now? How have you found yourself developing as a leader? Where have you landed? I mean, it's really hard. As I start, I only have I have 20 employees. I have found it to be so incredibly hard to figure out not to get walked on, not to be the jerk either, finding somewhere that balance, getting to know them as individuals, making sure that their future is something that we're talking about, we're communicating on their future. They need to have a plan. They need to know where they're going. How have you managed that over these decades of building a team?
It's a growth, Paul. You know, when we started with no employees, my father and I. So you take that, and all of a sudden, yeah, I got a guy. I need a guy. And I need a couple more guys. So all of a sudden, you got a few more guys. So I didn't have the benefit of stopping and going to leadership training and seminars. I think as a leader, especially today, you got to listen. When your employees have needs or concerns, listen. You know, one of the things we do, we take care of our folks, and I think they're compensated pretty well. Our health care, we pay 90 to 100% of their health care costs.
That's incredible.
No one else does that.
Nobody does that.
So this is company culture stuff. It's becoming really a problem to sustain that. However, you know, that's where we come from. I don't want anybody that works for me doesn't have health insurance. I don't want anybody worrying about that. So you try to instill that sort of company culture from the top down. Guys, you go on my property, you see something wrong, you gotta say something. Let me know. You're my eyes. You're extension of me. All of our people. And but getting back to the listening thing, you gotta listen to people. Good, bad, and otherwise. Sometimes you cringe and say, okay, all right. I don't agree with you, but okay, all right. You're right. I was a little harsh, or whatever the case may be. You've run through this. You've got employees. It's hard to manage that sometimes. And I don't know how people manage large organizations. They just have processes in place, and it's just cookie cutter. I don't know how large organizations operate because we're people.
Those organizations, then it becomes a problem because there's too much bureaucracy, and then nobody can get anything done because everyone's...
Because you're just a number. You're not a person. Mm-hmm. We're still at the size. You're still at the size. You know Jimmy that's, you know, mixing for you, or somebody's fixing a machine. You know these people. We still know our people, but it's harder and harder.
We were dealing with a company, where headquarters was in Japan, and we're dealing with somebody in Ohio who's got like 12 layers between them and Japan. It took them a year to pick a date when they were going to come in for their trial. A year to pick a date. The girl's in Ohio. I'm in Rochester, and we're going like, "What you want to do next Tuesday?" Like, wait, like, why? You know. But she's, "Well, I got to wait for approval from Japan." You know, like, man, it's the too big is a problem as well. You know, But you mentioned before about was I too harsh? Was I too easy? I've a million times in the last decade have I thought that I got it wrong. I was too easy. I was on this side of the pendulum. I saw something I didn't like. I didn't say anything. The problem happened. Did I just set us up for failure? But then I've also done the other thing. I've raised my voice a couple of times. I don't like it. I don't like that I've done that. I hated it after it happened, but it happened. And both of those, I think, were wrong. It's like in the middle somewhere. And I think everyone responds differently, too.
It's a learning process. Mm-hmm. You learn more than that. I raised my voice last week with a guy. You just get so disappointed. Why are you doing that? Why are you conducting yourself that way? Actually, it wasn't one of our tenants, or it wasn't one of our employees. It was a tenant, but it's a respect thing.
Yeah, I think you have to at some point, if you ever, and I'm sure over the years it's happened, if you're feeling disrespected, you do have to kind of swing to that side of the pendulum.
Unfortunately, even if you walk away and chuckle, you get back in your room. But you gotta stand up for yourself. That's the problem. You can't be bullied.
Yeah.
And that's a trend today, and people just push, and like there's just so much you can
just for shits and giggles, have you and your family ever said, let's play Monopoly at home? Like, I mean, because you're actually playing real life Monopoly.
I used to play Monopoly a lot when I was a kid.
Has it ever occurred to you that you're actually just playing Monopoly in real
basically,
life?
Basically, yeah.
It's pretty cool, actually. Yeah. Like, not that many people get to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you came on here because you mentioned something earlier. I never thought of it this way, but you said it, and I love it. The bid thing about the corporate. And you're like, I'm Andy. You know, like, I'm just, it's me. It's, come talk to me. Let's talk. Let's chat it out. You know, I'm right here. I'm on freaking Winton Road, man. Let's, yeah. You know, like, I got an office here. Yeah, I'm going to work every day.
It was quite disappointing.
That is so disappointing. But the positive, the Main Street, man, it's going to get there. Yeah. You're so right. Being able to pop in and out of shops. I think of like Canandaigua Main Street and how you can just pop all the way down.
Millions.
Love it.
Of examples across the country.
Yeah.
And we have a Main Street that's suited for that, and we're not taking advantage of it because there's no incentives. So we have to work on incentives, and unfortunately, that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's no motivation for you to say, "I want to go to Main Street and I want to open up a restaurant. I'm going to spend $100,000 and this and that, and just wait for someone to walk in the door." Gee, it's not safe. It's not. You can't park. I mean, there's so many barriers. We have to break down those barriers and make it attractive for people. And some of that comes with incentives and helping people to make those decisions because those are the real entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Andy, did we miss anything? What do you think?
Oh, we missed a whole lot of stuff, but we don't have time.
You were so kind to spend this time. Thank you so much.
I wasn't busy. I was asleep in my office, so it was cool. Don't worry.
You're awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Okay.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.